What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Chemi Perez, son of Shimon Perez, chairman of the Perez Center for Peace and co-founder of Pitango, Israel's leading venture capital fund, discussing Shimon Perez's just-released memoir, No Room for Small Dreams, Courage, Imagination, and the Making of Modern Israel. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mevinah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Shinshinim, Chen Denachi, and Tamir Shakuri, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom, l'shana tova and gmar chatima tova. May you be sealed in the book of life for a good year in 5778. This coming Friday night is the biggest night of the year for Jews. No, it's not the Oscar, Emmy, or Tony Awards, but the evening of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the holiest night of the year. Prelude to the holiest day of the year. Yom Kippur is a fast day when adult Jews, those of us older than 13, neither eat food nor drink water. 24-plus hours in which we examine our souls and seek forgiveness for the wrongs of the past year. This is always a time of exaltation. That's why they call them the High Holy Days, but there is also a certain sense of pressure. We are in the midst of the 10 days of repentance now, the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. We try to right the wrongs we have done in the past year and reconcile with anyone we have injured or offended. It's a challenge to try to heal our actions from the past 12 months. It is perhaps a greater challenge to try to change the habits we've fallen into that lead us to do things we're not proud of. Our goal during these days of awe is to look honestly at ourselves and ask God to forgive us those failings we have committed in the last year, and so become whole. But as the Talmud tells us, for sins against God, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, atones, but for sins against other human beings, the Day of Atonement does not atone until we have made atonement to them personally. God cannot heal the breaches in our relationships. Only we can do that, by going to the people we've wronged and asking them to forgive us. So this is the most important time of the year for us ethically, a crucial period of reflection, self-examination, what Israelis call cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of our souls. On Yom Kippur, we commit ourselves to try to repair our own world through repentance, prayer, and charity, teshuva, tefillah, utzedakah. The melody that captures the essence of Yom Kippur is also the only tune that people come to temple just to hear. It's the Kol Nidre, the renunciation of failed vows that begins the night of Yom Kippur. It's the melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience in just a few minutes of music. Here's the great cantor Alberto Mizrahi's rendition of the beginning of Kol Nidre.
Oh!
Most of the Kol Nidre is sung by cantor Alberto Mizrahi with an arrangement by Sholem Secunda. The Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us. At this time of atonement and return, we remember that holiness begins for Jews with personal actions, mitzvot, not just words or professions of faith. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. Nonetheless, we do need to ask God for help. And that's never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring conclusion. Here's Israeli cantor and Broadway star David Fisher's end of the Kol Nidre. That was Dudu Fisher's conclusion for Kol Nidre. You know, we could do a whole show on the melody of Kol Nidre. Famous stories about Kol Nidre Eve, jokes about Kol Nidre, and so on. But the truth is, the only way to really appreciate Kol Nidre is to hear it live in a synagogue this Friday night on the eve of Yom Kippur, in a room filled with fervent prayer, soaring music, white clothing, and the power of the great Day of Atonement. It's a truly amazing experience. And it happens just one night a year this coming Friday night. But I would be remiss as a radio show host if I didn't give you a little bit of Kol Nidre shtick. It's not only great cantors who have recorded this amazing melody. In fact, a couple of non-Jews have tried their vocal cords on Kol Nidre, too. Here's Perry Como crooning Kol Nidre.
Kol Nidre. Vesole Ushvue Vacharome Vekonome Vekenose Vahi
Then there's my favorite bad Kol Nidre, Johnny Mathis of Chances Are fame, warbling Kol Nidre, sort of.
Kol Nidre
That, for my money, is the very worst Kol Nidre ever, and certainly the worst pronunciation. But when chanted well, the melody of Kol Nidre brings us to tshuva, to repentance. And it helps us learn how to work to heal injustice and brokenness throughout our world. It's this Friday night, starting at sundown at your nearest synagogue. Don't miss it. Our special guest this morning is Chemi Peres, son of the late Israeli Prime Minister, President, and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Shimon Peres, whose memoirs have just been published in a new book, No Room for Small Dreams, Courage, Imagination, and the Making of Modern Israel. Chemi Peres is also the co-founder of Israel's leading venture capital firm, but today he's talking about his extraordinary father. Don't miss it when we return in a moment here on the first Two Jewish Show of the year 5778.
Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Chemi Peres. is the son of Shimon Peres, whose new memoir was just published exactly a year after his passing. Chemi Peres is an accomplished venture capitalist, author in his own right, but he's here mostly to speak about his father and the new memoir. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
The good part is time differences. The memoir is called No Room for Small Dreams, and I would say that Peres often was called in Israel a dreamer, you know, almost like a Bala Chalomot. Tell us a little bit about what he thought of that.
My father thought that the greatest ideas come to us when we allow ourselves to dream. When we dream, we are released from prejudices, we are released from constraints, and we let our mind really dream great dreams. And he believed that only with dreams and dreaming great, one can achieve really significant achievements in life. So he was definitely a dreamer, but he was not only a dreamer, he was also a great servant of great causes through his life, starting with Israel defense industry, Israeli economic strength, and later on, of course, dreaming of world peace. And when you read the book, No Room for Small Dreams, you realize basically that he told his story in this book through dreams that he had, like coming to Israel from Europe, from an ultra-Orthodox house to an unknown land, the land of Israel. And another dream of settling and building a house and a kibbutz in the north. Another dream, of course, is founding a nation. But alongside those dreams, immediately he started to serve greater causes. As I said, initially building Israel Defense Forces and then Israel's economy. And last but not least, achieving long-lasting peace with our and neighbors.
Now, you know, you omit something that he was instrumental in, which was the unacknowledged acquiring by Israel of nuclear power, nuclear weaponry. That would not have happened without Peres's close relationships in France and within the labor movement around the world, would it?
Yes, absolutely. The nuclear facility, the Dimona project, was another great dream where he served a great cause, which is securing Israel's future, Israel's defense capabilities, and create a deterrent that did not exist before. And, you know, that was a real great dream because he had so much opposition from every side, from every opponent, whether it was the government or the military. Nobody believed in this project. And as a matter of fact, people thought that it would create a great danger for Israel when the Americans or the Russians will come and ruin Israel because of this project. But that was a great dream to be fulfilled. And in spite of all the setbacks, in spite of the skepticism and cynicism and the lack of funding, my father managed to fulfill that dream, which only shows you that when you realize a great idea, in spite of the opposition, when you look back, you see that basically everyone was unified around the concept of creating Dimona. And this is one of the peaks in his life. This is one of the stories he talks about in this book for the first time from his own point of view. And I think it's an outstanding story that also give the notion for those who are going to read the book that everything that seems impossible at the end of the day can become possible.
It's a beautiful message, reminded, you know, of the whole idea that Israel was impossible. It took dreamers to make it happen. We will talk much more with Chemi Peres. His father's memoir, No Room for Small Dreams, Courage, Imagination, The Making of Modern Israel, by Shimon Peres, is just published. When we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, as very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And L'Shana Tova, good new year.
Also to you and yours.
Thank you. You're just back from a trip. How unusual, of course, for you to be just back from a trip, but tell us about this really special excursion.
Right. Well, this was a special trip in many ways, but most of all, it's because back in 1973... One of my closest and oldest friends named Larry Sternberg, who was the head of the sports program at Camp Ramon, Wisconsin, and I decided to yield to the repeated and very insistent requests of our own campers, with whom we'd worked for 4 or 5 summers already, and take them on their way to the Ramah program in Israel that summer of 1973 to Eastern Europe and what was then the Soviet Union. And we planned a long time and a lot of details, and we ended up taking a British bus and bus driver from Brussels to Moscow and back on different routes and whatever. And in Moscow, the bus driver had a few days off because we took overnight trains to and from Leningrad. So we saw quite a lot. And for many of the 30 kids who participated in that, this was a transformative experience. It was a turning point in their lives. Something like 8 of them made Aliyah, which is a huge percentage. 6, sadly, are no longer alive, so there's only 24 still left. And a subset of that 24 approached me like a year and a half ago and said, would you plan a reunion trip? I said, well, you have to see if there's a level of interest. Oh, yeah, there is. And we'd have to decide an itinerary, and these days it's really, really hard to get a visa for Russia, so I would discourage that and thinking. Anyway, we finally agreed on an itinerary that began in Budapest, went from there to Vienna, to Odessa, to Kiev, and to Prague. And we had 18 people for about 12 days. It was a remarkable trip. And as many of them have written in subsequent emails, we just got back a few days ago, and this week we're observing Rosh Hashanah. They said this was a great way to end the old year and to begin the new. And it was terrific to be together with our friends and, in a sense, to be back at camp again, because many of these people literally hadn't seen each other for 44 years. So they, you know, in some ways reverted to how they were when they were 15 years old. They acted like junior high school kids or high school kids at best. In other ways, it's a very successful group. There were 5 or 6 university professors, a couple of MDs, a couple of lawyers. It's a high achievement group. And interesting also is that in terms of their evolution as Jews, a few have become quite Orthodox. A few have become quite liberal.
Secular,
and
shall we say?
Most have stayed sort of middle of the road, main core conservative Jews. And most still belong to the congregations in which they grew up. So I guess we'll have to talk next week about the specific cities and what's going on in some of these places. Some of them are not as well known as they ought to be, and I look forward to sharing those details with your listeners.
Which we will. Thanks, Tom. Shana Tova. We welcome our Shin Shinim, representatives of Israel here in America, from the Weintraub Israel Center, Tamir Shakuri and Chen Dinachi. Shana Tova, good new
Shana
year.
Shana Tova, Rabbi. Shana Tova. Thank you for having us.
Oh, a pleasure. Gemar Chatima Tova. Too may you be sealed in the Book of Life. We say Tzom Kal, an easy fast, lots of holiday stuff. Tell us what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Yomim Noraim, the High Holy Days, are like for you back home in Israel.
Well, I think that holidays in Israel have a really central part in the year, mostly because it's like a national holiday. Everyone celebrates it, like most of the people. And it's kind of, we have days off from school and from work, and the entire family, all around, families gather around and have like a big meal together. And there's very specific foods, which you probably know, the head of a fish and pomegranate, and it's really
anything
special.
Anything made
and
with
nice.
Honey, things that are sweet, lots of good stuff.
Yes, a lot of honey cakes. And I just like it because it's like a tradition, and everyone all over Israel is seeing their family, their extended family, and just talking and seeing each other. And I like that about the holidays.
So Yom Kippur is the most important, holiest day of the year, of course, fast day. It's a special day in America, but in Israel, of course, it's kind of an overwhelming day.
Yeah, it's really special because no one drives. So the streets are completely vacant. Everyone walk on the road. Everyone, the kids ride bicycle, and everyone walks on the roads and just like...
In the middle of the street, right?
In the middle of the street.
Which in Israel you never do because drivers are crazy. But there's no drivers on Yom Kippur. The notion of a cheshbon ha-nefesh, a time of, you know, accounting of our souls, that's so central. That doesn't necessarily mean people are in the synagogue all day. Tell us a little bit, Tamir, about your experience of Yom Kippur.
So in my moshav, it feels like a very special atmosphere because you look around and there are no cars and all the kids are outside, and like you meet with your friends and you play a lot of like card games, and you sit, and after you really be with everyone, you also pass your time with your family, and you sit at home and you really reflect and think. I read a lot of books in Yom Kippur because I feel like it really helps me get like connected to like my inner self, and it's like it's a very special time of the year. The synagogue has a really big spot in this special holiday because we go there often, and even people that don't often go to the synagogue, we meet them there and we all sit together and we pray, and it feels like a very special like Jewish day.
It is a very special Jewish day. Also, as Chaim was motioning, people, you know, Israeli kids, like American kids, are always on their cell phones, right? How about on Yom Kippur?
So on Yom Kippur, even the most addicted and connected to their phone kids usually leave their phone at home. And it's very special because everyone goes outside and sees each other and talk in person. And you meet everyone and people you haven't seen in a while. And you talk and you're not on your phone. So you actually communicate with people. And it's really, really special.
Fascinating. Sometimes small things can be huge. Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be sealed in the Book of Life for a good year, an easy fast, a good Yom Kippur.
Thank you, Rabbi. Shana Tova. Gemar Chatima Tova.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us?
The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov, good morning.
Good morning, and Gemar Chatima Tova.
Thank you.
Sealed in the Book of Life for a good year.
And you as well.
You know, this time of year, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, particularly Yom Kippur, in Israel they call it, you take a cheshbon nefesh, an accounting of your soul. This is really when we focus not only on what we did or didn't do in the past year, but also on, you know, where we are in life.
Right, and what we value. You know, it's time to set aside the craziness of our routines and really try to step outside of our normalcy, whatever that is, and take a look at our lives and take stock on what we value. And you made a good point that we look back on the things we did in the past year, our accomplishments, our failures, the things that we're proud of and the things that we're not so proud of. And maybe looking back, we would not do again. And we have a chance to forgive ourselves, forgive people around us that may have caused us some kind of grief, and really move forward. So you get this catharsis, this time to kind of purge the previous year, and a bit of recharge enters in where that space is created. And through that process, I think we also have an important time to take stock and think about what we value, what is important to us, and turn that into goals we want to strive to for the following year.
You know, everybody's done something wrong.
Right. Ain't nobody perfect, I like to say.
I mean, if you can get through a day without doing something wrong, that's pretty huge accomplishment. To make it through a week seems impossible. A month?
Right.
Let alone a year?
It's not easy being human.
No. No. And it's not easy being Jewish, because then you're supposed to look at all those mistakes all at once.
Right.
It can be overwhelming, but it's also a great opportunity.
It is a great opportunity. And, you know, I think we also have permission to kind of do what we can handle and, you know, touch the things that we can manage. But, you know, having that sort of communal focus, the religious focus, the spiritual tightening, and I don't know if that's the right word, that sounds a little rough, but this concentration, yeah, of this moment helps us to build capacity to dig really deep and to do that hard thinking. It's not an easy time of year, but it's a very rewarding time when all is said and done.
You know, it's kind of funny. I like that description of focus. You know, it's almost like an eclipse. Since we had one not too long ago.
I like it.
You close out everything else around you, and that makes you look inside.
And it's a beautiful analogy, Rabbi, because when that eclipse hits totality, you see things you don't ever see, you know? So when we take that moment, we get to see some of those edges, that diamond light, you know, and a different way of thinking and looking. And also, all around you, you're surrounded by this different atmosphere and this charged environment. Also, you know, very relatable to the high holidays. You might have a little bit of sermon work there.
I'm beginning to think I'm making progress. John, a good and easy fast.
Thank you.
And, you know, we don't say a happy Yom Kippur, of course.
Right.
A successful Yom Kippur.
To you and yours as well.
Thank you. We'll talk next week.
Have a good week.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. It is Yom Kippur Day. Towards the end of the morning service, Rabbi Levine sees a very worried-looking Maury Schwartz walk towards him. Maury's face is white. His eyes are bloodshot. He stands in front of the rabbi, sweating and out of breath. "Please, Rabbi," he says, "I must have a drink of water. I'm so thirsty and dry, I can't take it anymore." Rabbi Levine is astonished. He says, "Today's Yom Kippur. We fast. We beg for forgiveness. You come to me and tell me you want to drink water? Be strong. Do not give in." But poor Maury Schwartz is in tears. "Please, Rabbi, just a small drink. I can't take it anymore." Rabbi Levine is not an unkind man. Touched by Maury's suffering, he thinks, relents, and says, "All right." He calls over the shamus and tells him, "Please give Maury a teaspoon of water." The shamus complies. A teaspoon of water is given to Maury, but it's not enough. Now he's crazy with thirst. "Please, please, Rabbi, I've got to have a real drink or I'll die," he cries. Reluctantly, Rabbi Levine tells the shamus to give Maury a full glass of water. Maury drinks the water down in one gulp, wipes his mouth, sighs deeply with relief, looks the rabbi in the eye and says, "Thank you, Rabbi, thank you, you saved my life. I'll never eat a schmaltz herring on Yom Kippur morning for breakfast ever again." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and have an easy fast. And now a word of Torah. This week, Shabbat is more than just the Sabbath. It's Shabbat Shabbaton, the great Sabbath of Sabbaths, Yom Kippur. We have two Torah readings on this Day of Atonement, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And while we all tend to agree on which portions of the Torah are read on almost every ritual occasion, on Yom Kippur there is a significant difference of opinion, really different choices as to what Torah section will be read. In Orthodox and Conservative congregations, the reading for the morning of Yom Kippur this Saturday describes the rites of sacrificing animals on the Day of Atonement when the temple stood in Jerusalem, followed by an obscure and interesting ritual, the scapegoat. The afternoon reading is a long listing of the kinds of immorality, especially sexual immorality, that are forbidden by the Torah. The most interesting aspect of these sections is the description of the scapegoat, a term that's become part of our regular English lexicon. In the Torah, at the time of Yom Kippur, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, in the course of preparing burnt offerings to place on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem, he would select two goats. One would be marked for God, the other for Azazel, a kind of code name for that which is unholy. It later came to represent the devil, in fact. The goat marked for God would be slaughtered and roasted on the altar, a normal procedure in the worship traditions of those days long ago. But the goat marked for Azazel had a different career. Instead of being sacrificed to expiate the sins of the people and seek forgiveness, he would instead be led out into the Judean desert. Not physically very far from Jerusalem, by the way. You can look east and see it most of the time. And then from a mountaintop, the ritual would continue. The high priest would place his hand on the goat and symbolically transfer the many sins of the people to the goat. And that goat, uninjured other than by the moral weight that had been transferred to its horny head, would be set free to wander in the wilderness. The scapegoat, through no fault of its own, would carry the sins of the Israelites out of the land. But it would remain unharmed itself, an enduring symbol of the errors of our people. The term, of course, has remained with us as a representation of a poor schnook tossed out by more powerful higher-ups to take the fall for their own sins. We still have such scapegoats today. Every staffer sacrificed on behalf of his superior is a kind of fulfillment of this scapegoat routine. Why do we have this ritual in the Torah at all? The message is obscure. While the essence of Yom Kippur is the concept of personal responsibility, the scapegoat implies that even on a day dedicated to self-examination and atonement, it really helps to know that some sins can be passed off on a lesser creature. Or perhaps the idea is simply that there's always some ritual that will release us from our failures, even though we know that we will remain fallible and human even after Yom Kippur. The Torah readings in the Reformed Jewish tradition, which are usually close to the traditional ones, are not so close on Yom Kippur. In the morning, we chant the great Torah portion of Nitzavim, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem, You stand here today, all of you, from the richest to the poorest, most exalted to most humble, and the Lord your God presents you with a great and sacred choice. Either choose to follow the mitzvot, to live a life of dedication to ethics and goodness, or sin again and stray from God. That choice is between spiritual life and spiritual death, but the choice is always yours to make. Choose life, uvacharta v'chaim, that you and your children may live long and flourish. Take responsibility. Choose life. A great message on this holiest day, this coming Saturday, Yom Kippur. When we return this morning on To Jewish, Shimon Peres' son, Chemi Peres, will explain what being considered a dreamer meant to his remarkable father, and how being both deeply Jewish and a man of great imagination made him truly unique among the founders of Israel, a Jewish leader for all generations. Find out more when we return here on To Jewish.
Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There was a little good news last week. Anti-Israel activism on college campuses across the country has declined, according to a new report by the Israel on Campus Coalition. Shows that there were nearly three times as many pro-Israel events on campus as anti-Israel events during the past school year. There were over 3,100 pro-Israel events in 2016-17, only about 1,100 anti-Israel events, and 149 campuses experienced anti-Israel activity last year, still a lot, but down from 185 campuses 2 years ago. The Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, BDS, against Israel also saw falling activity. There were 20 BDS campaigns nationwide on college campuses last year compared to 33 the year before. And only one campus saw a recurring BDS campaign as opposed to 8 the year before. Israel Apartheid Week, a week-long series of events opposing Israel, declined for the second straight year to 45 from 83 in 2014-15. By contrast, there were five more pro-Israel weeks in 2016-17 than there were the year before, and there were 300 anti-Israel speakers last year, a lot, but that compares to 500 just 2 years ago. Still, while these actions were declining, the anti-Israel movement became more sophisticated. It enlisted the help of outside organizations, American Muslims for Palestine, American Friends Service Committee, Palestine Legal, the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, and Jewish Voice for Peace are all external organizations providing support to student activists. In other news, Addis Israel, the most prominent Washington, D.C. conservative synagogue, which has hosted President Barack Obama and counts congressmen and women and cabinet officials as members, hired co-senior rabbis just in time for the High Holy Days. Addis Israel hired Rabbi Lauren Holtzblatt and Rabbi Aaron Alexander, both 40 years old, to succeed Gil Steinlauf, who left the congregation 4 months ago to create an innovation lab for the United Synagogue for Conservative Judaism. Steinlauf brought in Obama to speak in 2015, Vice President Joe Biden a year later, and last year was among the Washington area rabbis who urged President Donald Trump to reconsider his campaign rhetoric and the hate crimes it may have unleashed. In 2014, Steinlauf, who was married at the time, came out as gay to his congregation. Several Israeli ambassadors to the U.S., beginning with Yitzhak Rabin, have davened at Addis Israel. Addis Israel President Ricky Gerger said Holtzblatt and Alexander are already recognized as two of the most celebrated and prominent rabbis in the nation, role models for clergy working in our conservative movement and beyond. Two rabbis already worked together at the congregation, Holtzblatt overseeing adult education at Addis Israel. She previously directed the Jewish Mindfulness Center of Washington and served as director of campus initiatives and associate rabbi at Yale. In 2015, she co-authored a feminist interpretation of the Passover story with Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Rabbi Alexander served for 10 years as associate dean and lecturer at the Ziegler School of Rabbinical Studies in Los Angeles. He's a member of the Committee on Jewish Law and Standards for the Conservative Movement, the governing body determining Jewish law and practice. The co-rabbi model is rare among synagogues, but not unprecedented. The two conservative rabbis are only the third set of current co-head rabbis who are not married to each other. And the U.S. opened its first official military base on Israeli soil. The base started operating last week to inaugurate the facility. It included Israeli and American military personnel. It will operate independently, but within an Israeli military base in southern Israel that houses an air defense school. Several dozen American soldiers will be stationed at the base. For the first time, the flag of the U.S., our most important ally, will be raised on an IDF base, Brigadier General Tzvika Chaimovich, the IDF's head of air defense, said. This expresses more than anything the long-standing partnership and strategic commitment between the countries and the armies. The opening of the base comes a week after a new Iron Dome anti-missile battery became operational. These two events add another layer to the defense of the state of Israel against the high-trajectory threats that surround us from near and far, said Chaimovich. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews round the world. We are delighted to have returning here to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Chemi Peres, is the son of the late President, Prime Minister, Nobel Peace Laureate Shimon Peres. His memoir, No Room for Small Dreams, Courage, Imagination, The Making of Modern Israel, has just been published. Chemi Peres is the chairman of the Peres Center for Peace and the co-founder of Pitango, Israel's leading venture capital fund, who is also an author in his own right. So, you know, your father did everything. He was part of that founding generation, although he was one of the young guns initially, right? So how did he feel watching all of that become accomplished and seeing these dreams be realized? How do you move on to new dreams each time?
So my father wanted to be young forever. And he said in his life that count the number of dreams you have and compare them to the number of achievements you had. If you have more dreams than achievements, then you are young. And my father really was not interested in the past, and he was not interested in achievements. He always looked forward and always thought about what is the thing that does not exist that I should create. And as a matter of fact, when he worked with Ben-Gurion along the years, they split the responsibility between them. They said Ben-Gurion would be responsible for everything that exists, and Peres would be responsible for what does not exist.
Right.
And constantly. And he always said, when you have two options, always look for the third one. So he all the time looked for new horizons, new opportunities. This is why he was so intrigued by science and technology and innovation, and with the endless opportunity that they represent for us and for our future. And he was a dreamer, and he was an innovator, and he was an entrepreneurial statesman. And constantly was looking for better ways to secure Israel's future and make it stronger. Today, the Peres Center for Peace is the Peres Center for Peace and Innovation. It's going to be the center of inspiration to inspire young in age and young in mind to transition, as my father did, themselves from an old world to a new mind, from a world of territories to a world of science and technology. And today, basically, we can achieve everything that we need, whether it's energy or water or crops, with science and technology, and therefore no need anymore to fight wars and become great by killing each other. For the first time in history, with science and technology, we can win without having others lose.
I have to ask a little bit of a challenging question. Shimon Peres was a great foreign minister, won the Nobel Peace Prize in part for negotiating the Oslo Accords, had so many great accomplishments. And yet the Israeli public is notoriously tachlis-oriented, you know. He was prime minister. Each time he had challenges retaining the seat, his great rival, Yitzhak Rabin, within Labor, later became a close ally. Can you talk a little bit about their relationship?
Yes, first of all, it was based on mutual respect. Both of them were great leaders that were competing on the leadership of the Labor Party. And, of course, they fought with all their hearts and passion, which sometimes was a little bit unpleasant and create clashes between them. But at the end of the day, I think both of them were complimenting each other. And the greatest achievements came when they managed to work together, especially on the peace agreement. There are 2 points in the book where both of them joined forces and worked together very well. One of them is the Operation Antibi, which is a remarkable story.
It's an incredible
Israel.
Story.
By the way, I have to say, in the interest of full disclosure, I was in Israel when the Antibi operation happened. I was 15 years old. The story in the book is incredible, but please go on. It has a personal touch for me.
Absolutely. And I think it was a milestone for combating global terrorism. It was one of those events that demonstrated where terrorism is becoming a global threat. And it's a remarkable story that has so much with the history of Israel, and both of them collaborated. My father was the dreamer, the one that developed the unrealistic, so to speak, option to free all the passengers that were captured and delivered to and brought to Ethiopia. And Rabin gave him the backing at the end of the day by bearing the consequences together. The same happened when they worked together on the peace agreement. Again, my father was always the visioner, the dreamer, the one that saw the impossible turning into a possibility. And Rabin was there by his side as a partner. And both of them wrote remarkable stories in Israel's history, but also a lesson for the future. If we work together, if we collaborate, if we dedicate our life to greater causes, then there is nothing that can stop us from achieving the greatest dreams.
After Peres was past the age when most people, you know, expect statesmen to be important, he became maybe the most important president of Israel. That's always been a ceremonial office. You know, it's nice. It's like a valedictory for a long career. He made it into something much more. And I think he became more beloved in that role than throughout all of his long service to Israel. Can you talk about that experience a little bit for him, how he kind of transformed that office?
Sure. So, first of all, when he was prime minister twice and held every possible position as a minister, he used to say that when you are in a position that you have to exercise authority, you have to deal with a lot of friction. And significant part of your time is dedicated to solve problems and dissolve oppositions. But when he became president, he discovered that with goodwill, you can achieve much more than you can achieve with authority. He changed a little bit his perspective about what leadership is all about. And something that he spoke about in the last decade of his life, that a leader should be a servant, and a leader should serve his people and not exercise authority. And my father believed very much in this kind of leadership, and he studied also in the back of his mind. He started to read the Bible and started to see how kings basically were limited by their power in the Bible, and actually the kings, in his view, were the ones who belonged to the old world, whereas the prophets are the ones that represent the future. So he believed that with optimism, with vision, with goodwill, you can achieve much more in your life if you service your people. And I think that the people in Israel recognized that my father was a great servant for the future in Israel in every step and in every position that he held in this history.
Is it fair to say that out of all the Israeli leaders, Shimon Peres is the only absolute optimist?
Well, I don't want to underestimate others. But,
I mean, you know, with the whole of Jewish history is, you know, terrible things are happening. We'll tell you the details later. You know, this is pretty extraordinary, his whole perspective.
Yes, I would say that my father was both too Jewish and too optimist. And when, as you can read in the book, when my father, you know, he starts the book by the story of him departing from his homeland, from his parents, from his family, that later on was the entire family was murdered by the Nazis.
Yeah, it's really Lech Lecha as a story. It's the same thing.
Yes, in a very you know, bitter end when they were burned down in the synagogue, all of them, 2,000 people, including his beloved grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he never forgot to talk about the moment of the farewell, the departure from his grandfather, who asked him to promise him one thing, that he shall ever, forever stay Jewish. And my father was forever Jewish. But my father was also the greatest optimist, because he said, you know, optimist and pessimist die the same way, but they live different lives. And he was asked once, Mr. Peres, how can you be so optimist in light of what we're seeing around us? And he said, I've tried to be pessimist and optimist, and I learned that pessimist is much more interesting, and I cannot be pessimist. So I think, yes, he was probably the greatest optimist of all the leaders that we had, that I know, at least.
I have to share, after he retired as president, there was a fantastic YouTube clip made where he's trying to find a job. it's the funniest thing I've ever seen, I think, out of Israel. Tell me, I mean, how was he a funny guy in private?
My father was had a great sense of humor. Lots of people do not know it, but he had a fantastic sense of humor. He had a fantastic talent to tell stories. And my father was a kind of a guy that if you offered him, you know, something new, something fresh to try, he always said yes. For anything. He was someone who knew how to live and experienced every second of his life. And by the way, when you read the book in the epilogue, which is a very moving departure or farewell from the world, he sums up his life and he said, I was given 2.5 billion seconds to live in this world, and my life was given to me as a gift. And I used every second of it in order to influence. So he was really a party for any idea, as crazy as it can be. He was always ready to experience. He was never too lazy or too tired or never delayed things. Everything that came up as an interesting idea, he would immediately interested in exploring it. Like a child.
I want to thank Chemi Peres for a great visit here on Too Jewish. I felt we could go on forever. The new memoir from Shimon Peres, May Rest in Peace, is No Room for Small Dreams. It's an extraordinary book, and I think it'll be courage, imagination, and the making of modern Israel. Thank you so much. And where can people go to find out more about the Peres Center?
They can find it online, www.peres-center.org. And we'll be happy to join again your Too Jewish show and talk about the center itself.
Thank
it will
you.
Be an honor and pleasure.
It would be great. Thank you so much, and L'Shana Tova, a good new year, a healthy new year.
Shana Tova, thank you so much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Billy Jonas, Jewish children's music star, whose concert at the J is coming up fast. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our play out this morning on Too Jewish comes for Yom Kippur this week, Friday night and Saturday. Cantor Yitzchak Meir Helfgott and violinist Yitzchak Perlman playing and singing the Kol Nidre. My friends, Gmar Chatima Tova, may you be written and sealed in the book of life for a good year. And may you and your family have an easy fast, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, and a new year, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.